This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome to the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show. I am, of course, Stamford Chidge, and as ever, the effusive Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Oh, how lovely to be described as effusive, Chidge.
Yes, it's an adjective which I think is fitting for you. Your hair is looking effusive tonight, that's for sure.
Oh, thank you much. Yeah, it's growing a bit because of lockdown. Do you like my beard?
Yeah, yeah. I shaved mine.
Gone all Mason Mount.
Yeah,
I showed a little tufty bit.
Has he got a tuft? Yeah, I've got a tuft. Yeah. It's called a soul patch. Soul patch.
So is it?
Yeah.
Is
okay.
It?
Well, I think Clayton and I are just going to call you Tufty from now on. Of course, you've already heard. You've already heard the dulcet tones of Mr. Clayton Bierman. Hello, mate. It seems like ages since we had you on the show, but actually, it's probably only a few weeks.
No, it is ages.
Is it really?
I feel like I've been jettisoned. Yes.
Oh no.
A forgotten man.
No, I can't believe
really.
That. No.
I don't know. I mean, time all merges, doesn't it?
Do you know what it does, doesn't it?
Very strange.
How handsome you're looking on your background, Clay. You've got a very good background. Suits you.
My background looks handsome.
No, you look handsome as a consequence of your background.
I actually thought it looked like a bit of a prison cell type effect. I mean, you'd never tell from the light in here that's grey.
Oh, well, that may be it, but it just looks striking.
Thank you so much.
It looks very professional, I have to say. Now, talking of professional, me, Clayton and JK, we're amateurs. We're just mere amateurs. But Adam Newsom from football.london is a professional. It's so lovely to see you back again. I think we're really enjoying having you and Sam on these shows really regularly. It's lovely to have you as part of our little community, Adam.
Well, thank you for having me back. And yeah, I'm sure I can speak for Sam and say we're both really enjoying being on. So as long as you'll have us, I'm sure be here.
Well, it's lovely to have you on board, as I said. And we're going to kick right off, actually, because, of course, we were saying, weren't we, before we went on air, there's no midweek game this week for us to talk about. So really, it's time to concentrate a little bit more on what's been happening in the news. And, of course, you're very heavily involved with that. I think Sam was at the presser today, wasn't he, reporting
I was off today.
You were off today. Nice. I mean, they give you days off at Football London, whatever next.
Yes, I spent it looking after my two-year-old, so it wasn't the most relaxing day in the world, but there we go.
No. Well, good luck with that. That's all I can say there, really. But Chelsea have got a very interesting week coming up. I mean, it's a tough game against Southampton, even though they've been shocking recently. And, of course, there's an even tougher game next week, which we're going to be previewing properly on Monday night, in the Fancast on Monday night. There seems to be a view on Football London that Tuchel may have one eye on Madrid in what he does to set up Chelsea tomorrow. Would you subscribe to that?
I wouldn't be surprised if there are at least a couple of changes to the team with that in mind. Just because, you know, as we've said, the relentless schedule Chelsea have been on since Thomas Tuchel came in. I mean, he's been here 3 weeks and we've had, what, sort of 6 games under him already. So just in that respect, keeping the team fresh is important. But this Atletico game is not going to be easy. So it wouldn't be surprising if there are maybe one or two changes. I think we already know one, which is Edumendi's coming back in for Kepa, which we can talk about, I'm sure, in a bit. But that makes sense just to give Mendy some sort of match rhythm before that Atletico game. And Andreas Christensen's going to start, I think, just because Thiago Silva isn't going to play. So there's at least two sort of selections we already know. And yeah, I imagine there might be one or two more just a bit further up the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I've done my homework. You would expect nothing less from me. And I've given all the... Well, I mean, you know, I know I'm biased because I write for it, you know, like you do, obviously. But I do find it a really excellent source of news, you know, and I scooted through a lot of them, you know, today thinking about the show tonight. And I think another one of the inferences really was that, you know, we might glean a lot more about next week from the side that he picks. So if he picks Conte, for example, then that means that Conte might not play next week and all sorts of other things therein. So it will be intriguing. One of the things I'm most intrigued by at the moment, really, as many of us are, in fact, we're going to talk about it a little bit later when we do our own preview, but do you think Havertz might get a game on Saturday, or is he still a bit injured?
I would be surprised if he was to start. I would hopefully see him in the squad. It's interesting what's happened with Kai Havertz. Obviously, when Thomas Tuchel came in, there was a lot of talk about, oh, he's been brought in to get the best out of Timo Werner, and he's been brought in to get the best out of Kai Havertz. He's done that with Werner quite well. I think Jonathan may have issues with me saying that. But
you were on the infamous, yes, Jonathan Ramp show, weren't you? God, your introduction to the Chelsea fan calls, which has been sold to you as an intelligent, highbrow, well-mannered Chelsea podcast, went absolutely tits up within about 3 minutes, isn't it? Sorry about that, Adam. I forgot.
That's all right. I think
I've erased it from my memory.
I was goaded. I was goaded.
But who by Joe? Who would possibly goad you?
I wonder who.
I think hopefully JK's, you know, has maybe changed, softened a bit on Timo, especially now he's got a goal. So I think Thomas Tuchel has managed to sort of reinvigorate Werner. With Havertz, he obviously played against Wolves, was a sub against Burnley, and then has picked up this injury in training. We haven't really been able to pin down exactly what that was. When Tuchel was asked about it, he was very, to use the word again, he was effusive in his praise of Havertz. But he never, when you ask him about injury and he would talk about how great Havertz was and his potential, he never named what the injury was. Either way, that Kai's had a couple of weeks out, I don't think is the worst thing for him, because he's, that spotlight has been taken off him entirely already. And when he does come back now, he would have had 2 weeks off or 2 weeks out of the side. He hasn't done all the travelling that the other lads have. And he's going to come back into a team that's playing, maybe not playing well, but is winning games and is confident. So he should drop it, hopefully, back into this side that's now looking a lot more, is functioning perhaps a lot better than it was under the end of Frank Lampard.
Where will he play him, though?
Good question.
In goal.
I suspect we might see him playing as a 10 with the split strikers at some point. But that is an interesting one because he could obviously play up front as he did at Leverkusen. But then he was more of a false nine, which is what Mount obviously occupied against Tottenham. Yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. But as I say, I do think this couple of weeks might actually prove, you know, even if he was recovering from a slight injury, I think it might be quite beneficial to him longer term, just to maybe just reset a bit at Chelsea, because it hasn't been easy for him for a lot of different factors, not all of them that have been his fault or anything like that.
I mean, you know, Havertz is going to be a very interesting conundrum for Chelsea for a while yet. And I think, you know, it's good for people to be reminded of the fact that he is still a very, very young man. You know, he's got a way to go, I think, before we see the best of him, irrespective of any trouble that he's had. And of course, he's had a lot of trouble with the COVID and stuff. But I think the interesting thing for me, I mean, Jonathan's right. Where does he play? And we talked about this when Frank was in charge, that he's got this issue of trying to, you know, fit all these different players into, you know, only few positions. Adam, what do you think Havertz's best position is? Or is he one of these frustrating players that is actually so good in lots of positions, it's really hard? I mean, we had the same discussions about Mount last season, I recall. You know, what is his best position? Because he can play so many.
I think we saw, at Leverkusen, he proved that he can have a very good role to play as a false nine, or he can be very effective as that false nine who drifts off the defenders and drops into areas, or and then sort of makes runs late into the box. The problem with him at Chelsea doing that is, I thought it was quite interesting that Thomas Tuchel said on Monday, I think it was with Sky, that he said, you know, Timo is a guy who works best with a fixed striker. And the problem, or not problem, but the reality, if that is the case, is then you are always going to have to play one of Tammy or Giroud if you want to essentially get the best out of Timo Werner, which occupies two of those forward roles. And then you've got Hakim Ziyech, Christian Pulisic, Kai Havertz, Mason Mount, and, you know, and potentially Callum Hudson-Odoi, all vying for the other position if you do want to do that fixed striker and Timo Werner, which, as you say, this was a problem that Lampard had and he struggled with because he just couldn't get everybody in. And, you know, Chelsea are probably one attacking player heavy. But then saying that, if you were to, gun to a Chelsea fan's head at this point, say, which one of those would you want to go? I don't think that's an incredibly easy decision to take, because they've all got their own qualities and they will bring something a little bit different to this team. So, yeah, good luck, Thomas Tuchel, for the rest of the season, trying to keep everyone happy, because I think we've already seen with Hakim Ziyech, you know, he's barely played under Tuchel. He played against Wolves and then wasn't great against Barnsley, and that's all he's had really so far.
26 touches. It gave the ball away 26 times.
So I was there that night, obviously, and he wasn't great, but I think we've all seen his quality and what he brings. So,
magical left foot, a wand of a foot.
Hence the magician nickname.
Indeed.
But yeah, it's not
if
an
he
easy.
He was a magician, Adam. Why was he wearing his invisibility cloak against Barnsley?
Ba-dum-tush.
Clayton, there's been a lot of news this week about a certain Mr. Kepa Arrizabalaga, and of course you are our resident goalkeeper expert. Now he's had two games in a row, obviously kept clean sheets in both. Everybody was surprised that he played last week, and of course Tuchel shrewdly was very clear that, as I said on Monday's show, das ist klar, that he's basically, Mendy is his number one and that's it. And there's some interesting pieces. I mean, you know, Football London picked it up, The Athletic picked it up, he's obviously done an interview with somebody, you know, saying that he doesn't really bear any grudges to Frank and he understood why, you know, he didn't get selected. What do you make of it all? What do you make of this attempt to rehabilitate Kepa?
Well, I, like everybody else on social media, when I saw the team news on Monday, went absolutely batshit crazy. Because the worst thing that has happened is that Tuchel, obviously with his good start, has now given us some hope again of a top four finish. And the last thing you want to do is jeopardise a top four finish. And perception was that by bringing Kepa in, that's exactly what you were doing. It's okay playing him against the Championship side in the FA Cup, and he did okay. But then playing him in a league game, was perceived to be a risk. But, you know, football's a lot about statistics, and you're playing against a team who basically had the lowest shots on goal ratio in the Premier League, who were basically missing their best striker. And so the risk was slightly limited. But even saying that, it is still a risk. And the biggest problem that we've got at the moment is scoring goals. So had we gone one up, I mean, obviously we went two up, so it didn't become an issue. But had we gone one up and been hanging on like we have been in a lot of the games that Tuchel's been boss, all it would have taken was one ricket. And that could have cost us quite dear. Now, I know it's all hypothetical because it didn't happen. But personally, I just think playing him was utter madness. I really did.
Why did he play him? What was that all about?
Because, as I just said, I think he perceived that the risk was minimal.
No, indeed. But why play him in the first place? Just to give Mendy a rest? What was that?
Well, he talk some gubbins about physically and mentally resting.
I'm not buying that.
Utter bollocks on the basis he hadn't played for a week. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, you know, social media went into meltdown, and I was one of the absolute numpties on there who went into meltdown with them. Because basically, you know, the general perception was, why put yourself in that position if you don't have to? Now, there was lots and lots of gubbins about the board had told that he had to play. Well, Thomas Tuchel, if you read anything about Thomas Tuchel, if the board tell him to do anything, he's getting his coat and he's off. Yeah. That's just not a thing. Whether he perceived that, you know, if Edu has a ropey period, it's good to have somebody, a confident backup. But Caballero could be that confident backup. I mean, God bless him. You know, we all feel for Kepa. But not the expense of results. I think to play him in the league game was madness, and I got absolutely no idea why he did it.
Well, Adam, hang on a second.
It's interesting how Clayton can be unbelievably rude about Kepa, and rightly so. And I am unbelievably rude about Kepa, and I'm vilified on Twitter for doing so, of not giving the boy a chance. And yet here he is, and he's the keeper, and he knows. And we share the same feelings, and yet he's allowed. Not a word will be said because Clayton knows.
I have the answer to this, JK.
Yeah.
It's and you're not going to like it.
No, actually.
Well, I've set myself up here for something.
I'm going to break the habit of a lifetime of not being incredibly unkind and rude to JK. I mean, the bottom line is, mate, is that life is just horribly unfair.
And that's
why.
I didn't need a platitude.
Anyway, I want to hear from Adam, because Adam,
yeah, absolutely, Adam.
Wanted
Sorry,
to
Adam.
Come in, and I Adam might have some information that we don't have. So, Adam, please come in with the point you were going to make.
I imagine, and I think, I don't imagine, Thomas Tuchel said this, or was asked this last week in his press conference before the game, whether or not Kepa was essentially in a similar position as Havertz and Werner, in the sense he was a very expensive signing and an asset that Chelsea need to be rebuilt, basically. And he said, you know, every player within the squad, et cetera, no matter how much they cost, usual manager response. But he didn't dismiss that at all. So I think there is the reality there that Chelsea paid an awful lot of money for Kepa, and a ridiculous amount of money. But, you know, they were kind of forced into it because of Courtois. But that 71-odd million quid is something that Chelsea just can't write off. And at the moment, what would Kepa's value be in the wider sort of transfer market? I don't think it would be extremely high. So Chelsea do have to try and find a way to sort of get his value back up. And I don't think he's going to be the number one goalkeeper going forward. But Chelsea do have to protect their asset, basically, and try and show the world he's not as bad as he potentially has been at Chelsea.
That is a highly intelligent analysis of it, Adam, and I don't really disagree with that at all. But what I would say is, if that's the case, why don't they use the tried and trusted method, which is to loan the bloody player out so he proves, rehabilitates himself and rebuilds his career away from causing any destruction and damage to Chelsea? You know, so ship him off to a club in Spain, none of whom have got any money, by the way. So actually, they'd be getting a good deal because they wouldn't be having to spend whatever Chelsea would want to, you know, charge them the transfer fee. And he can rebuild his career in an environment where he's happy. I mean, I cannot understand why that isn't happening, because it's the most sensible solution for everybody. And he may end up, you know, looking good in La Liga, and somebody might be prepared to spend 40, 50 million on him. Okay, maybe. 20.
The thing is, and this was mentioned on social media, you know, the whole thing, and you're quite right, they want to protect their investment. They've screwed up, and the person who screwed up does not want to take the fall for this, because however rich our owner is, spunking 70 million without any sort of comeback is not good news. And the fact that whoever scouted him, whoever bought him, has basically not fallen on their sword or gone away, we'll never know who it was. That's the bottom line. But when you talk about investment, this club has shown by the way they heartlessly got rid of the old manager, rightly or wrongly, it's all about top four. And top four is all about money. So you have to weigh up, is it a bigger risk to lose the depreciation on the goalkeeper or lose the Champions League place? That for me was the question. And I think, you know, the club is driven by getting into the top four and making Champions League. That's what all their decisions are based on. So, you know, on the one hand, they don't want to lose the 70 million. And on the other hand, they jeopardize it by, you know, not getting shot at this guy. But I mean, you know, what normal club will take him though?
I think that's, yeah, the reality of it is, I think, yeah, Tuchel very much did a calculated gamble against Newcastle and it worked.
But surely driven by the board. We've gone round in a circle here. Why would he play him unless the board said to him, we really want to give him an opportunity to play, to be in goal at some time early so we can put him in the shop window?
Okay, so being very cynical about this, Tuchel knew that he was good. You know, when Tuchel took the job, I'm sure one of them was, we need to integrate X players. We need to, you know, we've got all these players and Kepa was on that list. And you have to think that Tuchel played him against Barnsley. He made a great save in the first couple of minutes, a really good save. And presumably walked off that pitch 20 foot high. Felt good about himself.
He would have been almost 5 foot 10 then.
harsh but fair. So basically, Tuchel has made a decision by saying, we're playing Newcastle. They don't score any goals. Their top scorer's out. I can risk him in this game.
Right.
And that's what he did. And therefore, he's got the board off his back and said, look, well, I did play him in a couple of games. Don't know. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Or perhaps he was trying him to see whether he thought he was better than Lindy.
I just want to leave the final word to Adam because we've got to move on in a minute because we've got our guest waiting in the wings. But Adam, I mean, by all means, answer JK's point.
But I don't think, as we said, I don't think Tuchel would just do something because he was asked to by the board unless he truly believed in it. It was probably smart man management on his part to play Kepa against Newcastle because it was a calculated gamble and one that pays off. He's been true to his word then of making sure everyone gets a chance, which is what he said quite early on. And so, you know, yeah, it's easy to forget that Kepa wasn't always really bad. He was Spain's number one goalkeeper. And there is a goalkeeper in there that is talented. I wouldn't be surprised, and this isn't based on facts or inside information, it's just a hunch, I wouldn't be surprised if he does go out on loan in the summer. He's still got 5 years left on his contract. Amazing. Or 4 years. So
yeah, got a 7-year contract.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so he would have 4 years. There's nothing potentially against Chelsea loaning him out for 2 years of that and then hopefully seeing a return on their investment 2 years down the line. But yeah, I think it's hard to remember that Kepa wasn't always this bad and that there is a good goalkeeper in there. So who knows? Maybe Tuchel can unlock that. But I don't think he's going to be number one.
Maybe Tuchel's more of a magician than Hakim Ziyech, if that's the case. Adam, before I let you go, have you got anything coming up, any big articles coming up next week to delight us? What are you planning?
We will obviously have quite a lot going on with the Atletico Madrid game. Be a lot of stuff around that, and I should have quite a good interview with somebody. I can't say who it is just yet, but it's not a current Chelsea player. It's a former Chelsea player who, yes, I'm hoping that works out.
When's it coming out?
Probably after the Atletico game, right. But we'll see. We'll see.
All right. Well, I'll look out for that one definitely, as I'm sure everybody would. You might even get one from me if I pull my finger out this weekend. As they say, Adam, hold the back page or something like that. Adam, as always, delightful to see you. Hopefully, we'll get you back on very soon. But enjoy the game tomorrow. Are you covering it, or is Sam doing it tomorrow?
Oh yeah, I'll be there.
You'll be down nice. At St Mary's.
I will be, and I'm looking forward to covering a game which isn't in sub-zero temperatures. So that'll be a nice treat.
Well,
so,
give me a wave on your way down when you get on the M3 when you go past Winchester. Give me a wave.
I will do.
All right, mate. Lovely to see you. You take care and we'll see you very soon.
Yep. See you later, guys. Have a good evening.
We will.
Andrew, thank you.
Bye.
Brilliant. That's Adam Newson from football.london there. Lovely man. Chelsea fan and also a fan of the Chelsea Fancast. He used to listen to the Chelsea Fancast before he got the job at Football London. So how about that? Now, we're going to have a quick break, and then when we come back, we've got the lovely Steve Grant from the Total Saints podcast to talk opposition view, Southampton, all of that. We'll see you in a sec.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back for part two of the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show. And of course, it is now time for this.
The Opposition View.
And on tonight's Opposition View, I love this. This is, you know, because we had loads of them, you know, in the first half of the season. Now, they're all coming back. So we clearly didn't upset any of them because they've all said yes so far. And the latest to say yes again is the lovely Steve Grant from Total Saints Pod. How are you, mate? You well?
Yeah, very good, thanks. How's everyone else?
Well, we're good, I think. Aren't we? Jonathan, are you good?
I'm competing here with Dubai by just having the world as my background.
You're looking like God, mate. But then we knew that anyway. Clayton, you well?
I am very well. I'm very jealous. What's the weather like in Dubai at this time of the year, Steve?
Pleasant. Yeah, it's about sort of high 20s. So yeah, it's pretty good for a sort of pasty white Englishman like me. Give it about 3 or 4 weeks and it'll be well into the mid-30s, I think. So
it's not miserly shite like we've got here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's all relative, isn't it?
Well, I think I'm beginning to think that living... I mean, as you know, Steve, if you remember from the last pod, I'm in Winchester, so not far from Southampton at all, and I'm beginning to think that I should have been born with webbed feet because it's so bloody wet here. It would have aided and abetted me getting around. Now, first thing I really want to talk about is obviously Southampton, but... I mean, you lot have been in horrendous form. You've lost your last six, and yet you had a great start to the season. You were even top of the league at one start. I had all my best mates from when I was at school were on the phone to me very quickly pointing out where Southampton were in the league compared to Chelsea. But what on earth has happened?
Injuries, schedules caught up with us. I mean, the pressing game that we play, I think, naturally is... a pretty risky strategy in a season like this where everything is knocked down. You've probably got a month less of actual game time available to you. So you're playing a hell of a lot more midweek games. I mean, the Christmas schedule was actually relatively kind to us compared to previous years. I think we had 4 days between each game, whereas in previous years we've had the sort of most compact schedule of everybody. So we kind of got off lightly a little bit, which kind of explained why we were able to then beat Liverpool shortly after New Year. But it's basically since that game that everything's kind of fallen to pieces. Key players being injured, a little bit of a lack of form. I mean, a run of absolutely extraordinary refereeing decisions that have gone against us.
Oh. Surprise there.
Well, yeah, it's...
It's dreadful. Referees are dreadful.
Oh, they're appalling, and I mean, the problem is that they're kind of not being helped out by the system. I think. I mean, I don't want to kind of turn this into a referee rant. I mean, I'm
you'll be here for an hour if you start JK.
Well, yeah, that's the worry. I'm kind of in favour of VAR broadly as a concept. But the problem is that the referees are managed by Mike Riley, and he's one of the most pathetic specimens ever to have taken a whistle in the Premier League. So him being in charge of all of them, what we're seeing is kind of probably what most people will have expected from
it's
that situation.
Cronyism, complete cronyism. They're
all it's nuts. And it's... What more can people do? I mean, they brought in this system. The science and the mathematics behind all the offside stuff is in place, and yet they've got a former PE teacher, a former police officer, and various people who have come from non-mathematical or scientific backgrounds, trying to draw lines with sort of isometric angles and all this sort of stuff. Leave it to the scientists. They're the ones that know that. Let the video referee deal with subjective things like fouls and handballs and stuff. Although, I mean, they're obviously making a complete pig's ear of them as well at the moment.
Yeah. One thing I can tell you, Steve, just to make you feel a little bit better about tomorrow, is that you've got one thing on your side, and that's the fact that Anthony Taylor's the referee, and he hates Chelsea. So, you know, expect a few sendings off, some very dodgy, controversial penalty decisions. So you will actually have 12 men playing for you tomorrow, not 11, which is probably a good thing, actually, Steve.
That's going to be enough.
But... Well, I was going to say, I mean, I know for a fact that Walker Peters, Diallo and Walcott are all out. I mean, how big a miss are all those three going to be for you?
Walker Peters is the main one. I mean, Walcott was brought in on deadline day, I think back in, Christ, whenever that was, beginning of October. And everyone kind of thought, well, he'd be a bit part player, but he'll be useful with his experience, and you know, he's still got a fair bit of quality as well. But he ended up actually playing every game because other people got injured.
Not been and bad, then, though, has he? He's impressed. I've been every
he's,
time
he's been seen. Yeah, he's been pretty good. He's been, to be honest, he's been a lot better than I expected him to be. I kind of thought, what are we doing here? Guy on big wages coming in with nothing to prove, and you kind of think, well, that's not really the sort of signing that we tend to make. But fair play to him, he's been excellent. And I mean, one of the big things with him is, you know, with Walcott, he's always going to say the right thing in public as well. He's a very
nice man,
very good.
He's a lovely guy, and he's very well media trained.
So
all the sort of homecoming stuff, the club went big on it, and he kind of embraced it. And it's been great with him. Diallo has only played sort of two or three games from the start when Romeo got injured over Christmas. So we've not seen a huge amount of him, but he's been impressive. But actually, I don't think we'll miss him too much because Romeo and Ward-Prowse are both available, and they'll play that role.
Romeo always seems to step up against Chelsea. I mean, it makes sense because he used to play for them, but he always just seems to be in the mix. I'm more impressed by. Can I just ask you a question? I've always been a Redmond fan, Nathan Redmond fan. Has he been firing hot and cold? Has it not been happening this season for him?
Mostly cold this season, I think. He had a spell just before lockdown last season where he was looking kind of back to his best. But I think the 3 month break didn't help him in the slightest, and he's not quite got back to it. He's had a couple of niggly injuries, and when he has come back in, he's been a little bit hit and miss. He was good against Wolves in the cup last week, but then was basically anonymous in the league game three days later. So
I don't understand that. He's so talented because there are some games you just watch.
Toss a coin, I think.
He's run it. Has Minamino been any good coming in?
He was excellent at Newcastle, although standing out in a team that managed to lose to nine men is probably not that difficult. But he was, I mean, I barely noticed him on the pitch for an hour against Wolves. He obviously couldn't play in the cup games; he was cup tied.
Sure.
But in the league game, I mean, it was weird because we played really well first half, and yet he was really peripheral. Barely noticed him at all, and didn't improve second half. Took him off fairly quickly to change the system around a little bit.
Interesting stuff. Ings, of course, I would say is the main threat. I think he's a very, very good player.
Wonderful player.
He's a Winchester boy, isn't he, Steve? If I recall, am I right in that?
I think he was born in Winchester, yeah.
All the best people are, Steve, I have to say.
I think he's based in either Fawley or Hythe.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew he was. So him and Wayne Bridge, both... And me, all born in Winchester. Surely there's some link there somewhere. But anyway...
You were born in Winchester, children.
I was born in the Crow's Nest, as it's called. Oh, which is the
pub somewhere?
No, that's the County Arms next door, mate. But Winchester Hospital is a very old Victorian hospital, right on the top of the hill, and right at the top was where the maternity unit was in those days. This is back in the dark ages, obviously, because I am that old. and it's colloquially known as the Crow's Nest because it's right at the top. Anyway, we digress. Danny Ings, Steve, great player, I think. He's been a bit in. I mean, as a Saints fan, I'm sure you probably always worry about his proneness to injury. How fit is he at the moment?
Difficult to tell. I mean, his performances have been fine. Been a couple of games where he's been really quiet, but I don't know whether that's necessarily him or that's just where the team's been playing badly. So yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I think the Wolves Cup game helped him a hell of a lot. Where, I mean, it was the archetypal ball goes in off your shin and you get a little bit of luck and all of a sudden you might go on a bit of a run. Obviously, scored that cracking volley in the league game on last weekend. So hopefully he's now sort of in the start of another of those good runs. Because I mean, let's be brutally honest, we need it.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, you may or may not know this, but you probably would surmise it. But you know, Southampton away is hugely loved by a lot of the Chelsea match going fans, especially me, because of course it's
guaranteed win.
Well, I mean, we've done very well recently. Obviously, I think we've got a last five games down there. We've been unbeaten, but I mean, over and above that, it's just a great outing. A lot of, you know, you bump into a lot of people you don't normally bump into. Of course, for me, it's great. I hop on the train at Winchester, and all my mates have come down from London, and it's a great. We'll go to the Giddy Bridge, get absolutely hammered on cheap beer, and it's just a great day out. A lot of talk on Twitter today from a lot of the people that I tend to go with down there will be bemoaning the fact that we're not allowed to go and it's one of our favourite away fixtures. I mean, are you surprised to hear that? I mean, you must be missing it as well, but for very different reasons, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's always got those sort of two or three away games. If you're an away regular, you've got a handful of games that you always particularly look forward to every year. Now for me, I would say probably Palace is usually one of them because it's basically on my doorstep in Croydon. Trying to think what other ones. Villa's always a good one.
Yeah.
Always a good drink up. And Newcastle for a weekend.
Apart from where you have to bloody walk up all those stairs.
Oh yeah, but then when you've had 10 pints, you kind of
that's true enough.
You don't really think about it, do you? And if anything, those 14 flights of stairs are going to sober you up a bit.
There is that. Well, I for one will really miss it because it's a really good fun away. I think the other thing that I like about it, I've actually figured out what it is. It's because I can have a few drinks afterwards and not worry about a long trip back because it's only about 20 minutes up the road for me. So it kind of extends the drinking day considerably. But, I mean, look, you correctly alluded to the fact that we're on a really, really good run down there, Steve. Last five games down at St Mary's, we've won every one. You've lost your last six. You're getting into that territory now where you've really got to win a match. Of course, this immediately worries me because we're brilliant at playing teams that are struggling back into form. But in all seriousness, how do you see it going tomorrow?
I think it's going to be a struggle. I mean, you've got a manager in who absolutely knows what he's doing and seems to already be getting a tune out of the players who perhaps either weren't playing or weren't performing under Frank Lampard. So that's a concern. But for once, we've actually had a full week to prepare for a game. So I'm hoping that we're going to be a little bit fresher in the legs. That might help us a little bit. And I mean, if Anthony Taylor does absolutely detest Chelsea as you claim he does,
it's
then
true,
maybe we might finally get a decision go in our favour for the first time in some time, probably before. Since before Christmas, I think, is the last sort of proper sort of 50-50 call that's gone our way in a big decision.
Mm. It'll be Romeo will kick Kovacic and Kovacic will be sent off. That's the kind of thing that Taylor... can I just ask you, Steve, do you think it's that because of the way he plays, he likes the press enormously? Do you think they've just got knackered and that has been the reason why that they've not been at their best? in which case a week off might then be very beneficial to them in terms of playing the way they were playing before the run of six games. Because they were very impressive before the six games. It was really good to see, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd kind of started to see the effects of the schedule over Christmas. Fulham away and West Ham at home, both 0-0 draws, both fairly unimpressive games from both sides, to be honest. But from an attacking perspective, we were fairly anemic. And that seemed to be basically we just lacked a bit of energy, a little bit of sort of go get them type attitude. And I think, having to play Saturday, Wednesday or Sunday, Thursday, or however you want to divide the week up, just doesn't give them enough recovery time at the moment. Particularly with, obviously with the COVID restrictions, there are certain areas of the training ground that are no-go areas. So there's a lot of the specialist recovery things like the swimming pool and the cryotherapy chambers and stuff that apparently we're not allowed to use.
Really?
Which, I mean, surprises me given that basically there seems to have basically been three teams in the whole of the Premier League who have been really badly hit by injuries. Obviously Liverpool, because nobody ever shuts the hell up about it. but also Leicester. Leicester have had an absolute bucket load of injuries as well. And they also play a similar sort of high-pressing, counter-attacking game. And I do wonder whether it's that style in this condensed season is having an effect. Although we haven't really seen Leeds have any big injury issues so far. So I mean, maybe that's kind of been saved up and that'll hit them at some point in the run-in. But yeah, I do think the style doesn't help from that perspective. But ultimately, when you take a fairly pragmatic view of it, all 20 clubs are in the same boat. It's just that we've obviously got a smaller budget than probably half the teams in the league, and as a result, we've got a smaller squad. Mm. So when an injury hits our first team, the player coming in isn't anywhere near as good. Whereas, say, if Chelsea were to lose, obviously Pulisic is, I assume, still out for this weekend. If he's out, then you can substitute in Hudson-Odoi, or you can move Mason Mount into a different position. Or, I mean, you've got loads of different options. We just don't have that flexibility.
That's a really good point, actually, Steve. Because I like Hasenhüttl a lot. Actually, I think he's a very, very canny manager. And of course, he knows Tuchel very well from his Leipzig days. But it was really interesting to hear what he was saying about Chelsea under Tuchel and what he feels that Tuchel has done. But he was we've used the word several times tonight, he was effusive in his praise of Tuchel, but also very, very impressed with the quality and the depth of Chelsea's squad, which I think us as Chelsea supporters, we tend to overlook that a bit. It's quite interesting to hear that, you know, from the outside looking in, as it were. Steve, I'm going to nail your colours to the mast, my friend. How do you see it? You know, how do you see it going? What's the score going to be?
I think we'll score because I think defensively there's still issues there for you, which, I mean, playing against Wolves and Burnley teams that don't want to bother attacking isn't necessarily sort of covering up too well. But in the attacking sense, you're still a brilliant attacking side. And
they can't shoot, Steve. Remember that. They can't shoot, Steve. So, you know.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, but then we'll give you chances to tap it in from 3 yards. So,
we'll need that. Anything over 3 yards,
still no guarantee.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just can't, unless something weird happens fairly early in the game that gives us a huge sort of boost. I think we're probably gonna struggle. So I think it's probably looking at a 3-1 away win.
I'd settle for that all week long. Steve, as always, you've been fantastic. How's the Total Saints podcast going?
Yeah, it's going well. Just nailed our 150th episode during the week, actually. We had a sort of commemorative special interviewing Laurie McMenemy, sort of looking back at, obviously, 76, the team we had in the early 80s when obviously we bought the reigning European Footballer of the Year, Kevin Keegan, which obviously caught everybody completely on the hop. I mean, you would absolutely never be able to pull off that sort of transfer move these days. Hearing how all that got put together, and they ended up in I'm doing the unveiling in the Potter's Heron Hotel in between Romsey and Winchester. I don't know if you've been there.
No, I know it well. Yeah.
I mean, just the shock that shockwaves that sent through the game, and the brilliant attacking side that we had under him in the early 80s. Mm. That was a great interview for the guys to do.
Well, brilliant. No, I actually, funnily enough, because I finally followed you on Twitter and or Total Saints Pod on Twitter, and I saw that episode was pinned, and I've immediately quote tweeted it to my best mate, who's a massive Southampton fan. And of course, that day in 76 was the greatest day in his life. So he will no doubt love listening to that. And I mean, I'm sure I told you this story last time we were on, but I was actually at the semi-final, at Stamford Bridge, because everybody, everybody at Hampshire went. So because
my dad got me a ticket.
Yeah. I was thinking, why would you be a non-Chelsea match? But yeah, anyway. So yeah, a parallel universe. I could have been a Southampton fan, you see, because maybe that was the plan.
Got off lightly.
Well, maybe I did. No, I mean, at the time, I wouldn't have said that. And then right. Subsequently in the 80s and the early 90s. But bizarrely, it was because I went to Stamford Bridge and I'd never been to a ground like that before. And I just fell in love with it. And I just didn't want to be like my mates. You know what it's like at school.
Was it the novelty of having cars parked behind the goal?
It was just the novelty. It was the novelty of being taken to London for a day out. I was about 11, 12. So taken to London for a big day out. This will make you giggle. My dad's a Portsmouth fan, so my only previous experience of a football match was when I was about seven, and he took me down to Fratton Park, and I think they were in the third division then. And even at seven, I realised that what was being played out before me was absolute dog shit, and it was also incredibly violent. And I was only a very small little seven-year-old, so Dad actually gave up. He never took me back, and then just so happened that he got a couple of tickets to the semi-final, took me there. And I mean, obviously, he's not a Saints fan, so I don't think he was putting any pressure on me to support anybody, really. Just wanted to go for the laugh. And the rest, as they say, is history. So there you go. What could have been? Anyway, I'll leave you to dwell on that, Steve. Sorry, mate, you're saying?
Lucky escape.
Well, thank you. Steve, lovely to see you again. And enjoy the rest of your stay out in the warmer climes, you lucky boy. And you never know. We'll hopefully get to speak to you again next season. I'll look forward to that.
Well, there might be an FA Cup semi-final coming up.
There may be, perhaps. Indeed. Well, there we go. If there is, I mean, it's funny actually because we've got Sheffield United in the next round, and we've had the lovely Ben, the travelling blade, on a couple of times. He's already gearing himself up for his hat trick of appearances this season. So we're welcoming him back. So we'll do the same for you if we do meet you in the semi-final.
Excellent. Sounds good.
All right, mate. You take care. Lovely to see you, and thanks very much.
Thank you.
See you guys. See ya.
Brilliant. That's the lovely Steve Grant there from Total Saints Podcast. Lucky boy to be in Dubai, I have to say, at the moment. But
he could have been anywhere.
No, I think he was. I don't think he's the kind of... He doesn't look like the kind of bloke who would lie, like maybe you or me.
Got a sofa. It's always his sofa.
How would we know?
Well, I mean, I look as if I'm on a satellite.
You look like God. We've already done that one. Anyway, listen, we're going to have a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to give you our preview of Southampton versus Chelsea. See you in a minute. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back. I am Stanford Chidge, and you are listening to the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show. And I've got the lovely Jonathan Kidd, as always.
Lovely to be on the show, Chidge. Thank you.
Always a delight, and even more of a delight, if I can possibly be that rude and say so. Did that really come out of my mouth? Yes, it did. The absolutely stupendous Mr. Clayton Beerman.
Hello.
Always lovely to see you.
I'll get me cut.
Get me cut. I really miss you guys. I mean, this is great and all, but I mean, I haven't seen Clayton for a beer for so long, man. It's just ridiculous.
Forever.
You know, I was saying this to Dan. Dan was on the show on Monday, and
Dan,
I know.
Dan.
And actually, the last football match I was at, I got horrendously drunk with Dan, and I haven't seen him since. I haven't had a beer with him since, obviously, because of all the lockdown shit and everything.
Which was your last game? Was it the Everton game?
No, because I was up at a wedding in Glasgow for that. So it was
the Spurs game.
Yeah, it was the Spurs game.
I was Jonathan's honoured, esteemed guest, and you came in and you said, I can't drink anything because I've got the meeting.
Yes, I did. I was so pissed I ruined the video,
didn't I? I can't drink anything because I've got the meeting. I've got to chair a meeting.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm taking it that after said meeting, you just hammered it.
Well, yes, you're right. Do you know what? I'd completely forgotten. I remember going to see you and Jonathan and ruining your video because I'd already had quite a few.
No, we weren't doing it. I don't think there was any video... Did you do one? You might have done one. I don't know.
I remember ruining...
Time. It was the time before that Clayton came, you ruined the video.
I ruined that one because I was so drunk. Yeah. So I'm getting my drunkenness and meeting you two muddled up. But you're right. I had completely forgotten that I did actually have a supporters trust meeting. Hence, I was in the Atlas. Hence, I was with Dan. And I caned it through the meeting, that's for sure. Because I don't think I would have been chairing it because I wasn't the chairman anymore. And then, of course, Dan just basically kept pouring beer down my throat. And then we went off somewhere. We found about two or three pubs in Earl's Court. And I met up with loads of people like Richard Weeks, We're the Shed Boys. A lot of the Yanks were over. And it got very messy. Anyway, you lot haven't tuned in to listen to, you know, tours around the pubs with Chidge getting drunk. You really want to hear about Southampton versus Chelsea. So we shall get on with that. And the first thing I want to bring up with, actually, I'm going to talk to Clayton first on this one. Because Steve mentioned it, I've been reading about it, and actually, you know, Jonathan and I talked a lot about this on Monday, basically saying we've done really well under Tuchel, and he seems a really good guy, and I like what he's doing, but we haven't really played anybody with any ambition whatsoever. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that Southampton are going to have much ambition, but what we do know is that they like a press, they like a high press. And Barnsley, a bloody championship side, no less, as Tuchel admitted in his press today, have given Chelsea the hardest game under his management precisely because that's what they did. And we know Southampton will do that. So should we be a little bit worried about that, Clayton?
Yes. I mean, basically, you know what I think. They've lost six in a row. We've won five at their place in a row. It just pure mathematics tells you what's going to happen. But I know what you're saying, that we haven't actually played anybody with much ambition. And the only team we did play with any ambition, Barnsley, created quite a few chances. The thing that bothers me about, and I don't think I've been on the fan cast since Frank's gone. The thing that bothers me is the fact that we seem to have stopped creating chances. We seem to have stopped our shots per game, seem to have drastically reduced. So if we do play an opponent who has a go at us and perhaps scores a goal against us, I mean, that to me is more of a worry than us being pressed, because you can't actually, if you think about it, Chef Yu pressed us a lot at the beginning of that game. They really came at us. They really put us under pressure. And most of us on social media spent the first half moaning like spoilt bitches that we are, that you had to take Jorginho off because it wasn't his sort of game. And he's, you know, he should never play when we're being horribly pressed. But to give everybody their credit, they sorted it out and we actually managed to win that game. So I think, you know, Tuchel has come across as an intelligent guy and has made substitutions when he's needed to. So, yeah, I am concerned about the press, but I'm more concerned about the fact that for whatever reason, and it might be for the reason that our creative players are not on the pitch at the moment, that we're not actually creating that much in front of goal. I mean, I don't know what you think.
Has defence benefited as a consequence of that, do you think?
Well, I've got, Jonathan, I've got some stats here from Rick's wonderful, you know, thing he does on the Chelsea
website.
Thank you. And there is a stat here that our under Tuchel, our goals conceded have gone down from 1.2 to 0.2, but our goals scored have gone down from 1.7 to 1.4. So yes, I mean, just to pitch this in, JK, I'd slightly disagree with Clayton in one aspect. I think we are, I mean, he's right. He said it, didn't he, last weekend? We're creating more than enough chances. What we can't do, as you like to say, is hit the back of the net. They can't put them in, mate. That's the trouble.
Well, I think we've established nobody can shoot. So what's the chances?
Well, from 3 yards, let alone from 30.
Indeed. Well, no, you hope. Well, Mount can shoot, but seems his radar seems to be off. Odoi can shoot, but seems just to want to park the final ball. He wants to play it wide.
To Kovacic.
Well, no, whoever's coming in on the right.
Kovacic.
There, or even, yeah, James.
It's always bloody Kovacic, mate.
Well, no, Kovacic is always the one in front of goal, and we're all going, shoot, no! Oh my God, no, it's Kovacic, oh no. Is Pulisic injured again, isn't he? So what?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because he's picked up another injury in training here. It really fills my heart with absolute sadness. He was such a good player last year. Our best player, arguably.
Can I just ask a question here? Do you think it's possible that you might end up with Havertz never, ever making it? He can't find a position for him, and he never, ever achieves the standard and just stays with us for a couple of years and hardly ever plays?
No,
there are some players that have gone to the club and done that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They've just never quite managed.
Yeah, not trained on, as they say in the game.
Yeah.
No.
Can I just go back to your thing about the fact that we are creating chances. We are creating chances, but our shots on target is an all-time low. I mean, we're not creating clear-cut chances. I mean, I think there's a bit of a logjam, and I think the clever little balls that Ziyech can play in and the clever little balls that Havertz can play in is what we're missing at the moment. The Pulisic thing, I don't get. I really, really don't get. I don't know. There's real echoes of Arjen Robben here. There really is. The sort of the minuscule little injuries. I mean, watching the press conference today where basically he said, he felt something in his calf it's not an injury, but we didn't want to take the risk. What the fuck does that mean?
It's an awareness. It means we now know what that's called. It's an awareness. I've got an awareness in myself.
Basically, I'm not willing to put my bollocks on the line. That's what it is.
I think it's mental, Clayton, and I've been saying this on the show for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, as you would expect me to do, knowing what I do.
Yeah.
I think I mean, if you want to make an analogy, I mean, look what a great player Michael Owen was before he started to pull his hamstrings regularly, which he did. I mean, he was still a great player afterwards, actually, but he suddenly got plagued with injuries, and that is one of the real problems when you really rip your hamstring. But of course, if you're a player that relies on speed, as Michael Owen was, and I think Christian Pulisic is, it's always in your mind. If I go into overdrive, am I going to pull my hammy again? And I have a feeling that's playing.
Do you actually think that that's contributed to his insipid performances? And I do apologise to anybody from America, and it's not anti-American or anti-Pulisic, but... he's been very poor.
Can I say it? Because I'm consistently rude about people and nobody everybody objects to me saying it, so I'll say it.
You could be our punch bag, JK.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, Clayton. I'm happy. I agree. I agree with you completely, Clayton.
He's been woeful this season.
Quarter of the player, an eighth of the player he was last year.
Absolutely. His final ball has been non-existent. I don't know what it is. I mean,
I think it's actually unfair to compare him with Robin. Unfair to compare him with Robin because Robin kept being clattered, and you know, like he was taken out.
But he was a bit Dutch, wasn't he? If he broke a fingernail, he wouldn't play.
It was a touch. Well, but then of course when he got transferred, which Kenyon said was great business for what was it, 12 million? His dad then put him on an intensive training regime, and whether he altered his game a bit, because as I said before, that ability he had from ghosting in from the left, just by one turn in speed, curl it into the top corner, was just absolutely trademark.
He did exactly the same at Real Madrid as he did at us, and it wasn't until he went to Bayern
that's
that
right.
He actually turned into the fantastic player that we all knew he was.
The brilliant.
He was better at Bayern. I take your point about Real Madrid, but he was a better player after he left Chelsea than he was for us, and he was pretty bloody good for us. I'm gonna be like a broken record here. I'm gonna be stubborn with this. I absolutely think it's mental. I think we as mere mortals really do underestimate the, you know, when you think about elite football players, you know, none of us were elite. I know Jonathan was good, and I know you were good in goal. I've always said I was shit, but you know, we were not elite players. When you talk about elite football, the margins between success and failure are so small. So if you're off your game by a percentage point or two, whether it be fitness, mentality, or whatever, it makes a difference. So I think if you're mentally not 100%, it can affect your game. And I think that's what's happening. I mean, even to the extent, Clayton, where it might even be that he's so desperate to prove that he's over his injury that he's trying too hard. And then when you try too hard, you tighten up. And when you tighten up, you don't pass the ball to the person that you know, as accurately as you were wanting to. I think there's a lot going on with him. I think there's actually a lot going on with a lot of these Chelsea players. I wonder how good or anything about Chelsea's sports psychology department, because I just don't know. I don't know who they use or if they use anybody, but I tell you what, they bloody well need to, because a lot of these players, I think, could do with some psychological support, because it's coming through. I mean, Hudson-Odoi took a long time to start getting his confidence back, and he is now. Pulisic is a worry. Havertz with his post-COVID fitness, I think there's mental issues with that. Werner and his confidence in front of goal, although bless his heart, and I know it might upset JK, I think the one thing, I mean, I mentioned it weeks and weeks and weeks ago, didn't I, JK? I think that, and we had an argument about it, because you said he was sulking, and I said, no. I think he's got that Germanic arrogance and swagger. It's more of a look of disbelief. So the ball is not doing what it is supposed to do for me.
I have two left feet, and one of them has fallen off.
The ball is supposed to do what I tell the ball to do, which is to go in the back of the net.
Can you just tell me, how lovely was his smile after the VAR review was completed, after his goal? Because you just thought this is exactly what's going to happen to him. He scored a goal, and they're going to take it away from him.
I was convinced.
His face afterwards was just astonishing. It was fantastic. It was really, really good. I'm really pleased for him because he has worked his nuts off. Yeah,
It was easy for him against Newcastle because there was nobody putting pressure on him. But yeah, he worked hard.
You can only play what's in front of you, and the guy.
We shouldn't all go, yes, he's back. Let's just
I think that would be wrong to do. But I do actually think that he will be one of those players who will be much better in his second season.
Yeah.
Because I do actually think there is a really good player there.
Unless he's swapped for Haaland.
No, I think you'd have him and Haaland. I don't think Werner will go. If they get Haaland, it'll be Tammy and or Giroud that will make way.
Well, Giroud's basically on. This is the last year, isn't it, of his contract?
I will be astonished if he's here beyond the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because he's not mobile enough. But he's also getting old, mate. Yeah.
He's a good player. I love the bearded genius. JK, I'm going to go back to the question you asked about Havertz. I'm not worried about Havertz. Providing the club and the supporters are patient with this kid, because as I said, he's 21, 22. He's really still quite young in many respects. And then the whole country, the new country, and all of the other mitigating factors that we've discussed ad infinitum. I think he'll be okay. I think we'll once they figure it out, once he's settled into the side and they can find a way to, you know, fit him in, he'll be okay. I'm less worried about him making it at Chelsea and not disappearing into obscurity than I am Pulisic. I'm very, very worried about Pulisic, because if he, you know, I mean, it's a fact of life that he's injury prone. He's picking up injuries left, right and centre at Chelsea, whether they're, you know, psychosomatic or not. It's immaterial. They're stopping him from playing games for this club. They have done since the moment he arrived. So physically, there are questions to be asked. And I also think mentally too. And it really worries me because I think he's such a superbly talented player. I mean, good God, as I said, you know, Mount aside, he was our best player last year. He was certainly our most exciting and penetrative player last year. I want to see that kid like that playing for Chelsea, because I tell you what, if he does, we're going to win a darn sight more matches than we don't.
He had high hopes for him for this season. It's a consequence, didn't we? He was so good last year.
It happens, doesn't it? It's football, mate. Come on, you know, me and Clayton, of all people, we've been around a long time. We've watched a lot of football, a lot of players come and go. And you're right, mate. It does happen. You know, you get these players that come in and they're fantastic, and then a few things happen, injuries, mentality, environment, what have you, and it just doesn't happen for them. I really hope it doesn't, but I'm worried, I'll be honest with you.
I'll always quote Derek Kevin at you.
You love quoting Derek Kevin. Before my time, mate. I don't think I was even born.
Before everybody's time. Everybody listening to this. Before Clayton's time, before... I don't know.
I'm going to throw really random things. It just popped into my head, but it's really apposite given that you two are on the show tonight. But I don't really watch a lot of TV anymore because I really don't like TV. It's mostly full of absolute crap. So I'm too busy to kind of save things on Netflix and Prime. But because I've had the week off, I did, and I found this documentary which I watched last night called Three Kings, which is about Matt Busby, Bill Shankly, and Jock Steen. And I have to say, it was even if it was Man United, Liverpool and Celtic, who cares? It was about three greats of the game who, you know, really did so much to create the Liverpool, Man United and Celtic that we've had to endure for God knows how long. I recommend it to anybody. But you know what the thought popped into my head, which is why I'm bringing it up right now? Because they made the big thing of the fact that all three of them had been born within 30 miles of each other near Glasgow, you know, and Ferguson, of course, was born there too. And it just, there could have been a fourth, and it should and could have been Tommy Doherty. If we hadn't have fucking sacked Tommy Doherty in 68 or whenever it was, he could have been our Busby or Jock Steen or Bill Shankly, I think. Discuss.
Well, I think he had a desire to self-implode in a way that the others didn't.
Well, Shankly was pretty combustible.
Yeah, but he seemed to get his way as a result of the combustibility.
I think the major difference, from my understanding of the position, is the people that ran those clubs. I mean, they were sort of, you know, back in the day, they weren't football people. They were all businessmen. And I think that our businessmen weren't quite as good as their businessmen. I don't know if you've read the David Peace book about Shankly, which is like a fictional sort of recounting of what happened with him. But yeah, I mean, it's a really good thing. But, you know, it's all ifs and buts. And I know that sort of we've moved on, but I just have always thought that if Jose had stayed for about 10 years, where we would have been. Yeah. I mean, we might have been in the Southern Conference, but, you know, but I just think that, I don't know, it's really difficult. And I agree. I mean, I was very, very young then. I was only just getting into it, so I didn't realise the impact. I mean, obviously, reading Tim Roll's wonderful book is sort of, it's one of those terrible stories where you know that it's going to have a really shit ending, but you have to read it anyway.
But do you want to think that a man, but Shankly or any of the others would have decided to punish players because they'd gone out supposedly a bit late, and
Steen would.
They were all disciplinarians, so you have to think.
To the detriment of the team winning the title.
No, because you basically had the whole Busby thing with George Best.
Yeah,
where George Best would turn up when he fancied it, but Busby would put an arm around him, wouldn't he? Wouldn't dig him out and sort of try to look after him. But on one hand, what Doherty did was exactly correct. On the other hand, it just wasn't. It was,
wait till the end of the season
to punish them.
Yeah, and he should have dealt with Venables in a way that didn't mean they were constantly at each other's necks, and he got rid of Bridges for no apparent reason either.
Other than the obvious, comparisons, because they're all Scottish and everything, I think it is worthy of comparison, because if you look at, you know, I mean, it was just really fascinating watching it, you know, Man United, Liverpool winning titles and cups in a kind of a 4 or 5 year spell in the 60s. Chelsea were there and thereabouts all throughout that entire period. We were always top five, you know, we were there or thereabouts. And it just makes you think, you know, I mean, certainly with the way that United fell away in the early 70s, and actually, you know, the legacy of Doherty's team was the fact that we won the FA Cup and then we won the European Cup Winners' Cup. And actually, we weren't far away in the league that year as well. I mean, if we'd have kept Doherty and he had stayed for as long as Busby, Steen and Shankly did at Liverpool, we might well have got there in the end. But anyway, we'll never know. We'll never know, will we? One thing we do know is that we have got Southampton tomorrow, a match that I'm going to really miss not being there for, as I'm sure anybody who normally goes will be. I mean, the key thing really is, you know, I think we're fairly solid in defence, although the press does worry me. And what, you know, maybe this is the time we come up against a team who will give it a go. And that worries me, particularly if we play Jorginho and Kovacic. But, you know, JK and Clayton are right as well. We've got to stick the ball in the net. How are we going to stick the ball in the net, JK?
Well, he may have learnt, if he's the kind of tactical genius.
I mean, Hasenhüttl, by the way, he knows Tuchel and us very well. I'm expecting him to be far more tactically astute than any of the teams that we've played thus far under Tuchel.
Well, at the same...
What, even Jose?
Yeah. I don't think he's got a clue anymore, mate. He just parks the bus. That's all he does.
Yeah, there seems to be something going on there between him and the players. But no, surely they will have worked out ways of dealing with the press since the Barnsley game. Surely they'll play the ball over the top. Surely they won't tap the ball round the edge of the area as they did again, which was just absolutely horrific to watch when the opposition is pressing. So you try and play the ball out of the penalty area in short stabs to each other. And the most elementary way of playing is to play the ball long. That may be Southampton's undoing, or he may not. They may still be in a state where they can't press in the same way. So in which case, perhaps they'll defend more. I think it depends how they set up as well. And he may not play the three. he may play the four because he's ended up playing the against Barnsley. He played the four in the second half, didn't
43-1.
Yeah, and it seemed to work very well. I mean, I'm intrigued to see the status of Kante in this at the moment. Did you notice the end of the game when Kante played the other day, how he went up to him and sort of rubbed his arms as if whether Kante's been saying, I'm not playing very well enough or I'm not doing everybody else, he put his arm round. He gave him like a kind of massage to try and say to him, you know, bewildered what he was doing, saying, it's all right, you're going to be all right, because whether there's a confidence thing or he doesn't feel he's playing very well or something, but he's not looked the same player at all in this environment, Kante. And I'm not convinced he's going to start again. If he plays the three, he'll start again with Kovacic and Jorginho. But will he? Will he think, right, they're going to press, I'm going to play four to start off with in the back? I mean, I think it's dependent on what the setup's going to be.
I mean, that's an interesting point, isn't it, Clayton? And of course, every week we talk about this and we think, oh, you know, Tuchel changes everything and he's like really adaptable and flexible and he takes account of the opposition. And every week he plays the same, you know, 3-4-2-1. So, you know, but I take JK's point. We don't really know what he's going to do. We'll just have to wait and see until tomorrow, I suppose.
I mean, you said earlier that we're solid in defence. Well, the only reason we're solid in defence is because we've got seven defenders.
Absolutely. You know,
and that is why we sort of have gone off the ball.
We had nine in the second half against Newcastle.
I know. It's not great to watch. But, I mean, it's acceptable because he's learning about his players on the job. It's basically, I think, that we can play like this until the end of the season, till he sorts himself out, who he wants to keep and who he wants to get rid of. I think, you know, if you do have that pressure, you're quite right. I mean, it was just not rocket science, was it? Everybody was screaming at the telly against Barnsley. Just welly the ball. You know, it was a cabbage patch. You just had to knock the ball over the top. And we weren't doing it. And I didn't really understand that. I felt awfully sorry for Ziyech because, I mean, he was awful. But this is a guy who relies on touch and pace of the ball and what have you. And I just think it was a very strange decision to play him. I mean, it was like, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but going to be, but it was like he was managing by numbers. X, Y, and Z haven't played, so they'll have to play. And Ziyech is one of those. And I would much rather have seen Ziyech play against Newcastle, you know, at the bridge on a proper surface than have him plodding around. I mean, he didn't help himself because he was utter bollocks that night.
He picked up an injury too.
He had three players on him every time.
Absolutely. But so he shouldn't have played, you know, maybe. I don't know. That to me was a bit management by numbers. But we'll see. I think the interesting thing, the really interesting thing, is going to be the team that he picks to play Atleti.
Yeah.
Because that is going to be his first 11. Yeah. Without a shadow of a doubt. He'll fiddle about with it tomorrow, without a doubt. But when we see the team against Atleti, that is going to be what, after a month in charge, Thomas Tuchel's first 11.
I think you're right, Clayton. And if I'm Thomas Tuchel, you know, I mean, all these really, really good, shrewd, technical, tactical managers, you would expect them to be plotting away way ahead in terms of games. And I mean, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the biggest game on the horizon when he turned up was going to be Atletico. That's going to be the benchmark, really. That's going to be the barometer of where we are. So if I'm Tuchel, then I'm every single game leading up to that, yes, of course, I'm trying to pick up points here and there because, of course, you've got to get in the top four. But I'm thinking ahead to that game. Who are the players that can go and do a job for me in a very, very, very tough couple of matches against Atletico? So I have you absolutely right. I wouldn't be surprised if there might be some surprising selections tomorrow, perhaps, with that in mind.
I think that's right. I mean, you know, if you talked about Fergie and it's sort of well known, isn't it, that Fergie would tell players, you're not playing today because you're playing in 2 weeks' time or you're playing in this game.
Yeah.
So whether he's doing that now, it'll be interesting. I think there is a good chance, I mean, subject to his fitness, that Havertz will play at some stage on tomorrow.
Do you think Ziyech will play tomorrow?
No.
No.
It was quite interesting, actually, in the press conference when he was asked about Ziyech. And he said, it's totally my fault. He said, he more or less said the only reason he's not playing is because I'm not picking him, which is a fairly obvious thing to say. But it didn't sound like it's his sort of player. I mean, if we go back to the whole Frank thing and the whole who bought who in the summer, you have to ask the question that if they knew they were going to get Havertz, would they have bought Ziyech? And my feeling is no, they wouldn't. And I think that's a real problem. I think Ziyech could well go in the summer, which is a great shame.
It is a bit, but of course, I mean, what we all forget, because he basically pitches a good game, just Tuchel. He's a very, very bright man, and it's all, yes, we're going to attack at every opportunity and score lots of goals, because that's what the supporters like. But actually, he's... Yes, he is. But that's the point.
Did somebody accuse you of having a Swedish accent?
No, I said Welsh. But I mean, the point is that he is not that guy. He is not some cavalier Bielsa-like manager. He is, I wouldn't say he's an automaton. But, this is, he comes from the country of Kraftwerk. It's very scientific. It's incredibly pragmatic. The whole press is designed with forethought, but it also requires that players put in a lot of energy and work hard. It's working hard. That is the order of the day. And old lovely old Hakim Ziyech, he no want to run back and track back, mate. He's a luxury player.
True.
If there's that true. Wonderful, wonderful thing they had on Match of the Day, forgive me, I can't remember. It might have been against Burnley or even Wolves, where he was caught high up the pitch and they actually managed to single him out on the camera shot, and you could see him kind of looking, can I be asked to go back and chase that? Nah, it's gone. I'll tell you what it reminded me of. We've all done this playing cricket, when the ball goes kind of near us and we could dive, we can't be asked, and we point, don't we, to the next fielder, that's yours. Yeah, look, you're all giggling, we've all done it. That was basically the football equivalent. That's what Hakim Ziyech did. So I don't think you're going to get a shift out of him in that, and I think that Tuchel doesn't like that.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, there we go. All right, come on then. Let's nail our colours to the mast. JK, what's the score going to be?
4-1.
4-1?
1-2-3. 4. 4?
4. Yes. So there you go. 4-1. Bloody hell, mate. Who's going to bang the ball in the net four times?
I don't know. Somehow it'll go in. Werner, score a hat-trick.
All right, I love your optimism. You never, ever cease to delight me. 4-1 to JK. Clayton, I expect a far more pragmatic answer from you.
You won't like it.
Go on then.
1-1.
1-1. That's very pragmatic. Possibly too pragmatic, but I'll take it. Yeah, 1-1. So JK says 4-1. Clayton says 1-1. I'm going for 2-1. That's what I put in the Prem Predictions League this week, so I'm sticking with that. Because I just can't see us scoring oodles of goals at the moment. There is something not functioning, which I do not understand. Whether it's the system, whether it's the midfield, which it quite possibly could be,
they can't shoot.
Well, there's the not being able to shoot, but there's something not quite. There's something missing, not quite firing at the moment. It could be form, it could be fitness for a lot of the players up front, confidence. Who knows? But I do think, and I keep saying that. I said it to Adam the other week. I think sometime, sooner or later, we are going to absolutely throttle a team. I really do think we will.
But that team should have been Newcastle for some reason, irrespective of the fact that they came out at half-time and actually pressed us for 10 minutes. We should have basically, they should have been dispatched 4-5, what have you. Yeah. It's for whatever reason, we're not creating as much as we were. And I don't care what anybody says and what statistics say. You think about the amount of fantastic positions that Callum Hudson-Odoi got himself into on Monday night.
And kept laying it wide.
And just the crosses, his decision-making was just all over the place.
I mean, I know we've kind of technically stopped, but I'm enjoying this so much that I've got one more question. It's just such a delight to see you again, Clayton, and talk football with you. But it seems to me that we've got this perennial bloody Chelsea problem that we've had stinking the place out for the last few years. We can only do one of two things. We can either defend well or we can attack well. What we don't seem to be able to do, and what we've not actually been able to address for the last, I'd say, three seasons, is to do both.
Well, yes, apart from one absolute standout performance, which was probably the highlight of Frank's reign, was the away game at Tottenham when we won 2-0, when we absolutely played them off the park. We should have got about four that day, and we defended brilliantly.
Yeah.
That was a really, really good performance. But I think the main thing is there's no consistency, and the only team that's consistent at the moment is Manchester City because they've won all these games in a row. But nobody talks about the fact that up to winning all those games in a row, Man City weren't consistent either. Yeah. It is just down to consistency. And these players are knackered, both physically and mentally. The prime example was that, you know, I try not to watch too much football, but every time there's like a game that I think I want to watch, I'll watch it if it's not a Chelsea game, you know, like a so-called big game. The standard of football is shite. I watched PSG play Barcelona the other night, which was the best football I've seen this season and probably last season as well. The actual interplay and it was great. And I just think that players are tired. I think, you know, it's overkill now. I think everybody's knackered mentally, physically, and it's just a really poor product.
It's a very good point.
That we're just not good enough.
Oh, well, undoubtedly not good enough.
I think we would all be prepared to admit that, JK. And I think we have on this show. We've been very honest. I do think Clayton makes an excellent point there, and I think it's something for us to remember too, because, you know, we grew up because we're all quite old. We all grew up seeing the best sides over the last 50 years basically being drawn from a squad of 14 players. So you knew your best side and you played it every week until one of them got injured and then somebody would come in, and that's how it worked. That ain't going to work in 2021 in the current situation we're in. I think we need to get our noodle around the fact that it really is a 24 squad game, particularly this season. And I think that feeds into what you were saying, JK, is that we may, and I think we've said this again, haven't we, over the last few seasons, we've got a good kind of 14, 15 group of players, but have we got a really good group of 24? Goes back to what you always say to me, JK, about Mourinho wanting two world-class players in every position. And we haven't got that.
Well, it may be that we actually haven't even got enough world-class players in the 11.
Well, I think that's a given, but you know what I mean.
Perhaps you've just got to face facts, and that Tuchel is trying to make, a silk purse out of a pig's what's-it, you know, so...
A sow's ear.
Yeah, sorry, I knew I was supposed to say that, but I missed the moment. Sorry about that. Sow's ear, pig's purse.
Say it in German.
Silk purse out of a silk purse. Silk purse out of... No, God, we must stop this. We must stop these terrible stereotypes.
No, I think it's... I love it.
Okay, silk purse out of...
I really don't care. I mean, as what's her name? Melania Trump. I really don't care, do you? I'm going to find you what the German translation is. Silk purse, yes.
Yeah.
Out of a sow's ear. Let's see if Google can do it. Oh, brilliant. It's a Seidenhandtasche aus einem Sauernohr. There we go. You learn a little bit on the Chelsea Fancast every week.
It's good to know.
I could have even given you the wonderful thing is that I haven't got the microphone on it because they quite often Google Translate will actually give you the real pronunciation of that. Anyway,
it's a shame it's just called the preview show rather than the more elusively titled.
It's been a bit of a long one tonight because
how to learn German.
We've kind of wandered off piste quite a lot, but that's because I just enjoy talking football with you both so much. And as I said, I've missed you, Clayton. You were right. The quirk of the schedule was that you got in really early for that schedule, and you're kind of right at the end. So that's why we haven't seen you for a few weeks. But there'll be
I swapped with Dane, didn't I? Because he had that emergency. Yeah,
you did indeed. But there'll be a new schedule coming out next week, so keep your eyes peeled. Now, you lovely people out of Mixlr, as always, it's been a delight having you join us. Sorry we haven't really engaged with you too much. We've been too busy enjoying each other's company, but we've enjoyed the show tonight. I hope you have too. JK and myself will be back on Monday evening for the usual Chelsea Fancast, and we will be joined by, oh my God, watch out everybody, batten down the hatches, the return of the Smut Buddies, Tony Glover and Alex Churchill as a combo. Oh my God. And we'll be looking back at the match against Southampton, obviously, and also looking ahead to the massive Atletico Madrid match coming up next week. So there you go. Clayton, delightful to see you, mate. Stay safe and well. And have a beer on me.
Thank you.
Good to see you, as always.
I've just had one.
Lovely. Good boy. That's what I like to see.
Love to everybody.
Yeah, you too,
man.
Keep safe. You too.
Keep well.
And as for you, Mr. Kidd, lovely to see you, as always.
Thank you. Joy to be on the show. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I'll see you. See thee on Monday.
I will. You probably will probably converse, all three of us.
Oh, we will.
Or whatever.
Or Discord even.
Or Discord even, yes.
Now you are there as JK Rovers.
Indeed I am, which is my first Sabutio team.
Was it really? Well, the people who are in our Discord group are absolutely loving it, by the way. I haven't had time to really talk to them much today, but they've been full of convos and they're absolutely loving it. But they love particularly match day, apart from the ones that were in there from the States, because they're about a minute behind.
They can't enjoy that very much.
No, they're enjoying it hugely, as am I. If you want to join our Discord group, by the way, all you have to do is sign up to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/ChelseaFancast. You only have to bung in a dollar a month. I mean, we're not greedy, but you do that, I'll immediately send you the Discord link, and of course you will get your name on the list for a Kerry Dixon mini banner as well, and I will send them anywhere in the world. So there you go. Right, we really ought to go. We've offended your ear holes long enough. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Clayton's got the beers open. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, keep it Chelsea. It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.